nothing that you offer, and the dream of last year's hero, the truth of revolution, brother, 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 brother.
All right, you're listening to Free Radio Olympia on 98.5 FM, and we have Mark on the line from Seattle. He was involved with the Insurrectionary Anarchists of Seattle. Mark, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, can you tell us about the group?
Pretty much right now, we're just a small group of people who are obviously interested in insurrectionary anarchism, that kind of theory, and also that kind of practice. So we're basically right now getting some smaller projects together, reach people, seeing who's around in the city and what kind of things people are into, and just trying to reach out at this point to other folks. And we plan on trying to develop some projects a bit later.
Right on. Can you tell us about insurrectionary anarchism, what it is?
Yeah, okay. So basically what I would say, like, insurrectionary anarchism is, like, primarily, like, a practice that focuses on the organization of attack against, like, institutions of domination within our society. So basically what insurrectionary anarchism is about is that we don't think that we're going to evolve to anarchism. What's going to happen is we're going to have to attack and destroy these institutions. And basically, what is called insurrectionary anarchism now has its roots in a lot of anarchist practice, of course, going back to the very beginning. People like Luigi Galliani and others who thought it was, like, anarchist role to go out there and attack, to be part of, like, social struggle, to be part of encouraging direct action and self-organization amongst the other members of the exploited. So basically, that's what we're about. There are a lot of insurrectionary anarchist groups all across the world. There are people in Argentina, Italy, Spain, obviously everyone's heard of Greece, in France, the U.S., Canada. So pretty much it's very widespread at this point, although I wouldn't say it's the largest trend within anarchist thought. But I feel like it's something that is becoming bigger because a lot of people are starting to get sort of starting to see the dead ends and pitfalls of general being part of the left and this sort of activist approach that people kind of, like, add up a lot of single issues and that somehow that's going to lead us towards a social revolution, when in reality what we have to do is build that through our practice. And what that kind of practice is called, like, is direct action against the state and capital. So,
how would you say insurrectionary anarchism differs from, say, syndicalism or anarcho-communism?
I would say pretty much all insurrectionary anarchists that I've ever met would also consider themselves, like, at least anarchist communists. Not necessarily anarcho-communist in the sense of, like, being a platformist or something like that. The difference with syndicalism in the fact that we kind of have this analysis based on sort of what we see as, like, the breakup of production in, like, the 1970s and sort of a shift from these huge centers of factory production that existed back in older times, that where you would have a sort of situation where you have tens of thousands of workers in one small area, in one factory, whereas now you have this sort of dispersed production that's across the entire planet. So we don't think you can fight that in the same exact way. So we think things need to be a bit more flexible. And also, when you look at the roles of unions historically, generally unions, including anarchist unions like the CNT, have played a counter-revolutionary role at times. And so we're kind of taking those historical lessons and applying them to the way that we're going to put our practice into practice today.
What is an insurrectionary anarchy, like, structurally and organizationally? How does that work out?
Right. So insurrectionary anarchism is different in the way that it sees how things should be organized. Primarily for informal organization, which means generally for anarchists, that's affinity groups and networking with one another, and sort of within mass struggle, building organizations that are based on the ideas of, like, conflictuality, and organizations that don't just carry on in time. They have a specific purpose, which is to attack and complete whatever aim they're built for. So, for example, people have built sort of these kind of organizations, these informal organizations, to fight against a high-velocity train in the northwest of Italy, and basically the entire idea is that we want to put a stop to this. We're going to self-organize, we're going to be autonomous from political parties, from unions, who basically try to use social movements, you know, to bolster their own aims, right? So to stay away from those things and to be conflictual, to attack, like those things that we want to get rid of, and not direct action, that's through self-organization. So, like, this has been put into practice many times, like I said, through the, against the high-velocity train. Some people in Vancouver, they were involved with squatting a building called the Woodward Squat. Anarchists in there tried to intervene against sort of, like, activists who were pushing people to basically come to the compromise table with the government. Instead, anarchists were saying, well, we've already taken over this place. Like, why should we compromise anything now? We like, control this space, and we should control it autonomously and these other things.
What happened with that?
Basically, the Woodward Squat was something that people got thrown out of the Woodward Squat by force, by the police, and people tried to reoccupy it several times, but eventually the police just overwhelmed everyone else. But I think one of the things that was communicated to me by, like, a lot of our comrades in Vancouver was that, you know, it was amazing to see how people went into this situation and took control of their own lives and took control of that space and weren't willing to let it go. And they demonstrated that through going back to this place three times to try and reoccupy it. And they were ready to, like, do battle to meet their aims. And it was pretty impressive, they thought. So that's one situation. And also, actually, right now, like I was saying, in the northwest of Italy, around Turin, in the Val di Susa area, people are fighting against a high-velocity train. And people there have been pretty adamant that they don't want this thing built, and the Italian government is signing, like, very peaceful rallies, and people responded and said, well, if you're going to break this up, like, we'll fight you, we'll occupy this area, and we will not let this happen. And so it's just sort of, like, trying to push these ideas that, like, you know, direct action, self-organization, these are going to get us to, like, a higher level. These are going to get us towards a social revolution, because it's kind of like putting these things into practice now. Like, the world that we want to see is a world where we control our own lives, and we can put that into practice right now.
Where does insurrectionary anarchy come from historically? Like, who are its main writers and thinkers?
Most insurrectionary anarchist ideas stem from older anarchist ideas. What we call insurrectionary anarchism today basically was a lot of theory and practice that came out of Italy in the 1970s. So a lot of people have heard of writers like Alfredo Bonanno, Costantino Cavalieri, people like that, Massimo Passamani. Those are a lot of writers that are in Italy, and they've influenced the practice today through, you know, not just through their writings, but a lot of, like, projects that people have been involved with over there. Also, there are magazines out today, like Will for Disobedience has been a long-running project. Originally, there was a magazine called Killing King Abacus. There's also a press now called Eberhard Press, and they have published a pretty good book called Fire to the Powder Keg, which is about the situation in Iraq right now. So, you know, I would say that there's a variety of thinkers that are out there that are doing a lot of good stuff, and I think that there are also going to be, I think, more up-and-coming writers. Like I said, there are some groups now in Argentina, and they've been publishing magazines and writing things. So I think after a while, we're going to see some of their writings get translated. So I think they're going to also have a big effect in what's going on as well.
Can you describe, like, the nature of insurrections and the conditions that usually go into starting insurrections?
Obviously, like, I myself haven't actually participated in an insurrection, unfortunately. Generally, the American populace is a little more subdued than in other places. But generally, what you can see is, obviously, small things can trigger larger uprisings. For example, like, even just in France a few months ago, two people were killed by the police, or they were electrocuted being chased by the police. And, you know, those things sort of exploded. And people caught on real quick. They saw these ideas like, okay, we can go out, we can attack the police, and we can go burn cars like they're doing in this Clichy-sous-Bois, which is the suburb where all the things started. So other people started saying, like, we can do this, and it just spread really quickly. And I think it's really just going to be like economic collapse, which is what happened in Argentina and how an insurrection broke out there. But I think it's just part of the nature of capitalism that it just destroys human beings and it, like, just smashes them under its boot heel, like, repeatedly, like, whether it's in the workplace or it ghettoizes people and polices them to death and just does all these things. It produces this sort of reaction to it that wants to destroy it. And so I think these things come out sometimes randomly, sometimes completely, like, irrational violence, but other times they come out and people are very organized. And I think they stem from economic, but I think also just not something that's just centered on the workplace. And I think that's an important point too, is that like the field of social struggle isn't just in the workplace, which is what some people sometimes argue.
How does insurrectionary theory aid spontaneous rebellions?
Well, the thing is theory doesn't necessarily aid spontaneous rebellion. I think people's actions and the way that people take action in solidarity with these kind of rebellions can aid those rebellions. So, for example, if there's things going on in other countries that people can support here, they can support that by attacking the common enemies that exist here. Because that's one of the arguments that I was saying earlier, is that, you know, we live in this global society now where we have dispersed production. We have, like, for example, there was an uprising in Algeria a few years ago, and it seemed pretty widespread, and the police that were repressing it, they were using bullets that are manufactured in Italy. So people tried to go to this Italian factory and shut it down. Like, that's one way to show solidarity, not just by putting out a leaflet and saying, hey, we think this is great, like, we support what you're doing. It's also saying, like, we think that what you're doing is intimately linked to our project as well, and so we want to support you like that. And so there's just lots of things that can be done. So I'd say, I mean, theory, of course, is, like, our theory and our practice, like, they have, like, a dialectical relationship, right? They influence one another. And so, like, obviously, like, our theory is going to influence our practice to the point of making us understand, like, how we can better attack things, or how we can better maneuver within situations. So our theory is going to influence that, but it's also about, like, the projects that we undertake, the things that we do to actually make a revolution or to aid in, like, rebellions.
What is your ideas on political violence?
Can you define political violence, maybe?
Well, I mean, I'm not even going to talk about property destruction, but, like, agents of the state, and in times of uprisings, political violence against agents of the state.
Right. Well, the thing is that you have to remember that, like, the society that we live in, like, it's primarily, like, social relations, right? And that's the whole argument that a lot of people have made against, like, assassinating people and things like that, is that, in general, like, you know, presidents are figureheads. They're part of, like, we exist within a system. It's not just bad people doing bad things. And that's one of the reasons why anarchists don't say we should replace them with better people, because we know that's part of the system. But obviously, like, political violence has been undertaken when it has been necessary. So that's the thing, is what people need to avoid, which I think that activists always do, and many people on the left, is that it's like a moral argument. So it's either like, well, this is evil, but this is good. The thing is it depends upon your aims and what you're trying to undertake. If you're undertaking an action and the police come and try to stop you and they're going to arrest you, then you should defend yourself. It'd be idiotic not to defend yourself. You don't want to spend time in prison. So, I mean, there's things like that. Will you use violence against them? Of course you would, because you use violence to defend yourself. And it's not even just a defensive argument either. That's one thing I want to make clear, is it's not just that we're legitimately, like, defending ourselves at all times. That's fine. Yeah. Is that thing clear?
To me, yes.
Okay.
What would you say is the role of the media and public opinion in insurrections?
I think the media is pretty much a dead end. A lot of people, when most of their actions they organize, and they're so media oriented, they're like, okay, how do we get this in the media? And the thing is what we have to understand is the media is part of this system. The media is part of, like, the situation is talk about how the media is part of the spectacle, right? The media helps create this reality and indoctrinates people. The thing is what really is public opinion? Public opinion is this thing that's, like, created by, like, media, right? So the thing is there's actually a really good article in the latest Anarchy magazine. It's called Democracy versus Desire. And the guy talks about a democratic crackdown, is that the media manipulates people into, like, you can manipulate the majority of the population into thinking that, like, we need to support repressive measures, right? So, I mean, I think people should be very wary of the media, because the media can destroy, like, our projects. And that's the thing, is when the media is there, when we're doing something that's really threatening, the media is going to be against you. And I think one really good thing to remember is that people in struggle generally learn from one another. So the 1934 general strike in San Francisco, the media came out and was just like, these people are, like, these are all communists. they're trying to start a revolution to destroy them. You know, they were maligning all these people who were just taking control of their lives. And so in 1946, in the Oakland General Strike, strikers marched on the Oakland Tribune, and they said, we want to shut this place down because we know that they're going to try to undermine us. So I think people need to be a lot more careful with the media. The media isn't neutral. It's not like every institution in society is not. It's not neutral. There's no equal access. It's that they're owned by a mega corporation, and those people have the vested interest in maintaining their power, and their vested interest does not coincide with ours. So.
What would you say is the role of technology and innovation in an insurrection?
Within insurrection, meaning like, or like what the people, or what's my position on technology, I guess?
No, I'm saying like how insurrection would compel the fighters to actually invent new things, innovate their tactics and strategies, and constantly like reevaluating everything.
Okay, well, I mean, that's one of the important things about sort of the relationship between theory and practice, I think, is that really we have to be wary of our theory not becoming something really dogmatic, not being something that we follow blindly, right? Because we're not, like, I think Alfredo Bonanno says that, like, anarchism is an idea that can be locked in a box and then, like, say, like, this is done, we've developed it to its end. Like, it's something that changes over time, right? It's not a dogma. So what we want to do is we want to base our theory off of reality and our ability to intervene within that reality. So it has to be based on, I guess, what other than not the best word, facts, like factual things, right? We don't just want to say, well, we think this is the best way. And that's what insurrectionary anarchism is about also, is like going out there and trying to experiment more with, like, what kind of ways can we press for, like, greater direct action, greater self-organization in struggle. So that's the thing, is we don't have, like, the full answer, right? It's not the answer. So we have to go out there, we have to try new things, and obviously, like, things that we're going to do, we're going to fail. And other times, we will have successes, and I think that's what we need to do. We need to develop our theory and base it on our gains and our losses and all these things and try to learn from our mistakes. And that's kind of what insurrectionary anarchism has done by looking at sort of historical struggles and saying, well, it's obviously, we don't think this is the time anymore for anarcho-syndicalism or something like that. This isn't, trade union struggle is something that has been fully integrated within, like, the capitalist system. So
would you say it's more of a process?
Yeah, I would say, yeah, definitely. It's the process, you know. It's not just, I don't know, it's not some plan that you can just put into motion and this is how it's all going to work out. That's the thing. We're not determinists, right? You can't ever really say what's going to happen. Like, you can predict what's going to happen. You can look at history and say, well, someone's tried this, and this is what happened in response to that, right? So you can do that. But yeah, it's definitely a process.
Will you talk about the Iraqi insurgency, since it's dominating the news headlines so much?
Sure, I can talk a little bit about that. Yeah, like I said before, Eberhard Press in Portland, Oregon, they just published a book called Fire to the Powder Keg. And its subtitle is War and Social Guerrilla Struggle in Iraq. So I think the insurgency in Iraq is interesting, but I think one thing people need to definitely think about before they just sort of cheerlead it on the side is that, like, you know, obviously many of these groups are dominated by Islamist ideology. Others are Ba'athist. And the thing is, others, we don't know what they are. Some may just be people who are out there and they invaded the country or in their neighborhood and they say, we're going to fight this. So not all of them are ideologically motivated. And the thing is, too, is resistance within Iraq isn't confined just to the insurgency. Like, there's organizations with the unemployed. I think there are things that are calling themselves workers' councils, but I haven't really read too much about them. So there's protests in the streets, there's gun battles going on, there's protests by workers and unemployed. So there's a lot of things going on that are helping to undermine the U.S. occupation there. But I think one of the things is that, like, for example, organizations like the ISO, and I forget what their name is in England, I think it's the SWP, they're sort of just, they say, support the Iraqi resistance. And the thing is, the resistance is not a homogenous thing. And like I said, it's made up of all these different forces. So there's ways that, obviously, none of us support the establishment of, like, an Islamic regime. And at the same time, none of us support the establishment of So we have to find ways that we can act in solidarity with people there who are struggling against that. And definitely, I feel like a lot of anarchists have done that, because when the war was being planned, a lot of people went out and attacked recruiting stations. They really shut those places down, and now people are starting to do counter-recruitment drives in lots of schools and colleges. And I think that's a great thing, and that's definitely had results. I mean, in combination with the way the war's going, you've seen the armies not being able to recruit enough people. And so that's definitely one way that, you know, the army is being weakened. So, I mean, in terms of the insurgency, you know, the thing is we don't exactly know the... But what you can see is that there isn't one leader, right? There isn't one front. There's actually a multitude of small groups who kind of, they seem to work together sometimes, and other times they don't. And so you don't, it's hard to get a picture, but it's not the same thing. It's not a national liberation front. It's not just Islamic fascists. It's not. The thing is you don't exactly know what it is, but there are actions within there that obviously we don't support. I mean, none of us are going to go out and say, yeah, that was a great suicide bombing that killed 30 civilians. I mean, none of us are going to support that kind of ridiculous violence that's completely indiscriminate, right? That's the kind of violence that the U.S. government puts into play. They drop bombs on a city and talk about collateral damage. Well, that's the flip side of terrorism. I mean, the state is a terrorist, and these other organizations are terrorists as well. So I think people have to maintain a critical stance, I think, towards what's going on. They don't have to just say, well, we support this because, you know, it's against the U.S. Well, not everything against the U.S. is something that we would support. And that's a trap the left has fallen in so many times, that they say, well, you know, these anti-imperialist fighters are, you know, they're helping to destroy, like, U.S. imperialism abroad, but what are they trying to replace it with? Their own sort of regime at home that's going to light people out. They're still imposing capitalism there. So it's, you know, we're not supporting the lesser two evils. You know, a lot of anarchists shouldn't have gone out to vote for Kerry, and they shouldn't also support just the weaker guy, either.
Anarchists voting for Kerry. So, that brings me to another question. What are your thoughts on reform and reformists within the anarchist movement?
I think there's a lot of... That's just, one of the things I think has been pointed out to me a lot of times by a lot of people is that maybe now, sort of, anarchism is kind of a catch-all term in the way that, for a lot of people in the 60s, sort of like Marxist or even like communist was a catch-all term. There's a very broad thing going on there. And that's one of the things I think people should be careful about as well, especially anarchists who are really interested in revolutionary social struggle, is that you can't just go out there and say, oh, well, anarchists think this or anarchists think that, because there's a lot of variety within the anarchist, and I wouldn't even say it's an anarchist movement, it seems to be more of a scene. So there's more people, like on one hand, you'll have people who are more interested in like critical mass and fixing bikes and doing food not bombs and just doing that. And then on the other hand, there are people who want to open, I don't know, some kind of school that's going to help people evolve into anarchism later. And there are others who are talking about fighting in unions to like take down capitalism. So there's a lot of different things going on. There's a huge reformist and sort of liberal painted strand within anarchism, and that definitely came out in the last like election cycle. That anarchists that I knew personally were like, well, maybe we should probably go vote for Kerry just in case, because you know it could be. And I just looked at them, I was like, that's completely insane. That like that's like if you talk about anarchism, you talk about revolution, like, and you're going to go out there and like think about strategic voting. And even that logic doesn't make any sense normally when you just look at like the structure of the U.S. and how voting, like in the Electoral College and things like that, and how it's not proportional representation anyway. But, so yeah, reformism is something that I hope will become less popular within the anarchist scene. But one of the ways I think people will move away from that, hopefully, is just through reality, by looking at what's really going on. And, you know, the rulers of this country and the rulers of every other country have no interest in changing much of anything. So I think reformists, generally what they can do is they can go and they can get minor changes put into place. And what that does is the system can say, well, we've improved these really blatant crimes that we've committed and everything's just back to normal. Like capitalism goes on. There's still prisons. There's still immigrant detention centers, all these things. So I think reformism is a joke and a waste of time for anarchists to even think about putting all their efforts into that.
Can you tell us about the new website and the projects that you're involved.
Sure. We just put together a website, and the URL is www.geocities.com/SEAINSUR. So it's C and Sir. We put this website together just to kind of have a web presence so that people sort of in the northwest of the U.S. or Cascadia or the west coast of Canada, whatever you want to call it, so people can see that groups like this actually exist in places in the U.S. And we want to use it as a way to kind of reach out. What we have on there, we have like a news section. What we want to do is use it as a sort of news source to advertise like that, not advertise, but to publicize things like direct actions, strikes that are going on, repression news, and things like that. We always would like submissions for things like that. We have that. We have our link section, of course, to further sites. A lot of different groups in the Northwest, like the Instructionary Anarchists of the Coast Salish, which is people up in Vancouver, and then there's a lot of things in Portland as well. And also we're trying to feature sort of analysis from the Northwest about the situation there. So, yeah, we're some of our projects right now, like I said before, we're kind of just reaching out right now, not in the activist sense of outreach, but really just trying to meet other people who may have similar ideas or are undertaking similar projects at this time. One thing we do plan on doing is kind of sending out packets of literature, I think, to anyone who's interested, just sort of free things that they can take a look at. And after that, you know, the thing is, you know, anarchists aren't going to make the revolution, right? We're definitely going to play a role within that, but we're kind of keeping our ear to the ground as to what kind of things are going on, like where if strikes break out or if there's some sort of like popular discontent, that there's ways that we can act within that situation. So we're kind of, right now, we have just a few smaller projects, so nothing too ambitious.
And the plans for the future?
Yeah, like I said, we're just kind of waiting to see, I guess, or looking for ideas. This isn't necessarily our plan, but one of the things, obviously, I think people that are listening to your radio show would have heard about is all the arrests that just happened in the Northwest and all over the country. And a lot of people are being extradited to Oregon and Washington for ELF and ALF crimes, or supposedly. So I think that's sort of situation where there's a lot of people getting subpoenaed for a grand jury, people that are getting arrested, and I think those people need solidarity, and they need solidarity in terms of, like, jail support, you know, money, letters, and things like that, but they also need solidarity in the sense of, like, what needs to happen in the face of repression isn't just that people back down, like, back in, the reason repression strikes is because, like, whatever you're doing is actually successful. It's not that, you know, they don't attack, like, armchair intellectuals because they just sit around and talk, right? They attack people that do things, people that they're afraid of. And so this definitely isn't the time for people to back down, and I think people should really think about that. And this is a time for our project maybe to become more radical, to really reach out and try to intervene in other situations that are beyond our normal sort of day-to-day reality, right? To look for other situations where people are fighting against things they don't necessarily support. So, you know, going out there and being involved in social struggle and supporting those people that way as well is really important.
Definitely, I agree. Do you have any more thoughts that you'd like to add?
Let's see. I guess I plugged all the websites I guess I wanted to talk about. You can, like I said, you can go to our website, which is www.geocities.com/SEAINSUR, and you can go on there. There's a bunch of links to different things in different countries, so you can just read around. Yeah, so I guess that's about it.
Cool. Well, thanks for being on the program, Mark.
Sure. No problem. All right, take care.